X-Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Food Industry Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to help keep you up to date.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Food Podcast. I'm Sydney Perlmutter, Senior Food Industry Journalist and Webinar Moderator at xtalks.com, and this week I'm joined by special guest, Carly Schalthaus. Carly is the Director of Communications and Public Affairs at the National Confectioners Association, or NCA, which promotes chocolate, candy, gum, and mints, and the companies that make these treats. The NCA also lobbies the American government in favor of the confectionery industry. So, Carly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's just jump right in. So can you provide a bit of an overview of some of the controversy that's surrounding the state level proposals to ban certain FDA approved additives? And then what are the main concerns from the perspective of the NCA?
The primary concern that we have here is that the people who are proposing these bans, the state legislators, are not the people with the expertise to make the decisions around food additives. This is a decision that should be left to to regulatory bodies, to the FDA in the US, and really make sure that we have this central food system that is being supported by scientific evidence and toxicologists and the experts in the field, and not state legislators who are, you know, Googling additives and deciding that they should be taken out of the food system. We need to leave it to the experts.
So then how might the adoption of these bans at a state level impact the confectionery industry as a whole, both operationally, but also financially?
You know, reformulation comes at an enormous cost. This is not just changing ingredients and finding new additives, which comes, you know, a USDA study shows that it takes 10 years and $1 million to find, you know, new substitutions. So it's not just the cost of the ingredients and the additives themselves and all the research and development that goes into that, but also they'll have to change their processes, right? The machinery, the different, you know, processes that they have. And so this would come at enormous cost to the industry.
So there was a press release in March that I was reading over, and it mentions the need for the FDA, like you said earlier, to assert its authority. So just can you elaborate a little bit further on why it's so crucial for the FDA rather than state legislatures to lead this regulation on food safety?
Absolutely. You know, the FDA is this central foods, it covers the central food safety system. And this is really key for food safety in the US. I mean, something, you know, that I think we benefit from here is that you can go into a store and pick up a bottle of water or a packaged good or produce, and you don't have to wonder if it's safe. You know that it's safe because there is a regulatory body overseeing it. And so, you know, we need those people. We need the toxicologists. We need the people with that scientific expertise to be the ones making those decisions, and not state legislators who are well-intended, but, you know, Googling different additives to take out of the food safety system. We want the experts to be in the process.
Right. And I'm kind of wondering as well, you know, what would be in it for them for these bans? It can't just be because, like, could you elaborate a bit on that? Maybe it's speculative, but
I mean, you'd have to ask them. You know, we are very much, I want to be very clear, we are very supportive of the food safety system working in the way that it should. We want FDA to be continuously reviewing additives as they are. They continue to do that. And so we want to make sure, though, that they are the ones with the expertise, that they are the ones making those decisions and driving those decisions, and not, you know, coming from state legislators who just, quite frankly, again, lack that expertise.
Right, right. So, of course, you know, the NCA has to ensure consumer safety in its products. So how does it do that? And then how might these state level changes affect your organization's ability to maintain the safety standards?
You know, our member companies, so the people who make chocolate, candy, gum, and mints in all 50 states, they follow regulatory guidance to a T. Consumer safety is of the utmost importance to us and to our companies. They want to make sure that people are safe as they consume their treats. So they are following that guidance to a T. If anything changes, of course, they change right alongside that. But it's following that regulatory guidance that's the key piece.
So can you discuss the types of scientific evidence that the NCA believes should be considered when making decisions about food additives?
Yeah, you know, look, I'm not a scientific expert. That's what FDA is there for. And we trust them to go through the processes that they go through to determine the safety of these additives. And again, we are incredibly supportive. We think FDA absolutely needs to be reviewing these additives and making decisions based on that. It's just one example. Brominated vegetable oil is an additive that they conducted further studies on, and they're taking steps to remove that from the food system. That's a real-time example of how our food safety system is designed to work, and it's a perfect example of how it is working. And as we sort of head down the road, we know that there are other additives. All of the additives that are in the, you know, in the California bill, as well as titanium dioxide, are up for review. They were up for review before the bills came about, during, they'll continue to be after. And as, you know, if anything is changes, of course, companies will respond in kind. But these are FDA approved food additives, and we're following that regulatory guidance.
Right. And I'm also wondering, I'm certain I've written a lot about these additives before, and especially when it has to do with, you know, European bans. So do you think that, you know, these proposed bans take some cues from Europe?
You know, of course, we see different, you know, different additives being used in different places. There are things that are approved in the EU that are not approved here in the US, and vice versa. As you know, as one example, red dye 3 is, you know, there's a little bit of a different space of guidance for what it can be used for here versus in the EU, but it is not something, it has not been found to be unsafe for use in food in by, you know, regulatory bodies around the world. So certainly that's part of the conversation. That's something that the state legislators certainly bring up. But when you look at it from a food perspective, it is determined to be safe by regulatory bodies throughout the world.
Now, of course, the NCA, I'm sure, faces some challenges in communicating the safety and science behind these food additives. So can you talk about some of these challenges when it comes to educating like consumers, but also lawmakers as well?
I mean, the rhetoric as part of this conversation, you know, from the state legislators, from Consumer Reports, from CSPI, from Environmental Working Group, from the people on, let's call it what it is, the other side, you know, this rhetoric around it is so, can be so confusing for consumers. You know, they're being led to believe by these interest groups, by a magazine that reviews refrigerators, that food manufacturers are using ingredients that are unsafe for consumption. And that's just not the case. They are, again, FDA approved food additives, and this rhetoric, this misinformation that's being spread by these groups is an enormous challenge in communicating. And look, I get it, right? It's easy to see these falsehoods that are so based in emotion presented as fact, but it's not, they aren't the facts, and that's not the science. And so what we want to do, we're very comfortable with the data and, you know, facts that we have from our perspective, but being able to, you know, cut through that rhetoric and communicate that out to people is of course a challenge.
And how do you think that these legislative efforts affect consumer confidence in confectionery products and then the broader food industry as well? I know you touched on that.
I mean, right. Being able to, you know, being able to understand the truth and not this misinformation, not these myths that these other groups would have you believe is fact, is really key here. I think for consumers, again, it's really easy to hear this kind of emotionally driven misinformation from these other groups and just accept it on at face value. But the reality is that these are FDA approved food additives. The FDA is, protecting our food safety system in the way that they are meant to, in the way that it's designed to work. And it's easy to sort of fall into into these falsehoods when really what we need are experts talking, experts sharing, going through the process of approving these additives, as opposed to sharing these very this emotionally driven misinformation.
Now, the press release I was mentioning earlier, it mentions that the FDA is modernizing its review process. So how does the NCA view these efforts, and what changes are you advocating for?
I mean, we're seeing already, we using that example of brominated vegetable oil and some of the other additives that are being reviewed. It's about increased capacity to meet the demands of modern times. So we are seeing an increase. And again, I can't underscore this enough throughout the conversation. We are very, very supportive of these additives continuously being reviewed as they have been. And so expanding capacity and meeting the demand that we have now to make sure that we can maintain the food safety system is key. The food safety system in the US, I should say, is the gold standard, right? It's the envy of the world. For centuries, we have been successfully feeding people in the US and around the world based on this food safety system. And so allowing FDA to continue to do their jobs and expand their capacity and really step up is incredibly important and should be left to them and not again at this statewide level to state legislators to decide.
Right. So, what steps is the NCA taking to address both the immediate and then also the long-term challenges posed by these legislative efforts?
Yeah, we NCA is very proud to be a leading voice in this conversation. And so what we are doing here is shining a light on some of the process and procedure and the really the misinformation that is being shared. So we are, obviously continuing to monitor this and continue to be this leading voice in this conversation and, help ensure that FDA can continue to do their job to keep our food safety system safe.
And can you just tell me a bit more about the NCA itself, how long it's been around, and some other maybe challenges and what else you've advocated for in the past?
Of course, yeah. So the National Confectioners Association, you mentioned in your intro, we work on behalf of the chocolate, candy, gum, and mint manufacturers here in the United States. There are nearly 60,000 people working in confectionery manufacturing here in the US. We operate in all 50 states in more than 1,600 manufacturing facilities. So chocolate and candy is big business. We have a really wide range of membership from the big multinational corporations that you know of to small and mid-sized, oftentimes multi-generational family-owned companies, and really run the gamut of all of the kinds of companies that you can have. Think of a product and their brand or company is probably in our membership. And so what we do is advocate on their behalf. We work to, ensure that chocolate and candy can remain this exciting, sweet little bit of sweetness for people, and to support our companies, especially being based here in Washington, D.C., to support them in their advocacy efforts.
Awesome. Thank you for telling me a little bit more. Well, that's all the questions I have for you today. So thank you again so much for joining. This was a really interesting conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Well, that's the end of this episode of the X Talks Food Podcast. If you like today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the X Talks Food Industry Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X Talks on social media, email podcast@xtalks.com, or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.